Blog Talk Radio.
If you find yourself in trouble, count on me, my friend. I'll get right up in trouble's face. You won't see him again. I've got the backbone, American. I've got the heart, American. I've got the will, American. Will you stand up, don't sit down? Stand up and don't back down. Stand up, shout it out. Stand up, let's make it loud. American, American.
Welcome to another exciting show with Southern Sense on Blog Talk Radio. So turn up the volume and enter our chat room, or grab your phones, call in, and join the conversation. Help us to restore the republic to this country and inspire the majority to be silent no longer.
Well, look me straight in the eye. Tell me what you see. I'll tell the truth every time. Yes, you can count on me. I've got the backbone, American. I've got the heart, American. I've got the will, American. Will you stand up, don't sit down? Stand up, don't back down. Stand up, shout it out. Stand up, let's make it loud. American, 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 American.
All right, another exciting episode American. Of Southern Sense here on Blog Talk Radio. I'm your hostess with the mostest, the radio chick Annie, along with my debonair, my suave, my sophisticated, my oh-so-handsome co-host, Cool Mike. Good afternoon, Mikey.
Well, good afternoon, Annie. Good afternoon, everybody, for this Tuesday, June 18th. It is great to be here. And you are right, another exciting edition of Southern Sense. You know, I've come to a conclusion, Annie, once we start the show and we take our callers and we have our guests on, we never know what's going to happen, whether it's all hell will break loose or whatever, but we are glad to have you here. Just a quick programming note throughout the show, I'll be posting in links in our chat room for everybody, and that is to Twitter, our Facebook. Annie has us networking on so many different reach-out networking programs and our friends online. I can't even name them all, but I will be posting those links throughout. Become our friend, and Annie will tell you actually how you can actually sign up and get updates from us as well on her newest of her newest online world friend. Annie, you should have been like in Star Trek. You know so many of these networking groups out there.
So, well, everyone can find all the links in just one location. They don't have to go all over the internet to find it. They just simply go to southernsense.webs, that's webs.com. So just don't forget to put the spider webs in between the Southern Sense and the .com.
Okay, the spider webs and the .coms.
Yeah, we're going to have a great show today. We've got an author that's going to be joining us. His name is Daniel Lyken, also goes by the name of Daniel Lyon. And he's going to be talking to us about his book, The Washington Vision. We've got a difficult dedication. Anyone that listens to the show knows that we start off every single show with a dedication to a fallen hero. And when I went and chose this dedication, I was looking for just one individual, but I could not ignore the others that were killed with her. So today's dedication is going to be a little bit difficult for me, but I'm going to try to get through it with Mike's help. So, Mike, if you will pull up the dedication music.
You're going to have to hammer that. I'm not online yet.
Okay. All right. This is going to be the Army. And this is dedicated to Army Major Jamie E. Leonard, Army Lieutenant Colonel Todd J. Clark, and civilian law enforcement professional Joseph Morabito. This is from the Times Union. Mourners lined up at a memorial service at Christian Brothers Academy for fallen Army Lieutenant Colonel Todd Clark. The 40-year Albany native died June 8th of this year in eastern Afghanistan, where he and two other Americans were shot and killed by a disgruntled Afghan soldier they were mentoring, according to Clark's family. A military jet carrying Clark's remains arrived just before 10 a.m. at Albany International Airport. A motorcycle escort accompanied the hearse and family members as they took a slow drive through Colony. People lined Wolf Roads and other Colony streets as the motorcade passed. "I just feel terrible about what happened to him and everyone else over there," Wayne Chandler, a retired plumber from Colony, said. "We're over there trying to help them, and they are killing us." The press procession passed Chandler and his wife, Antoinette, at a parking area near the airport. They, like other mourners in the motorcade route, expressed deep sympathy for the Clark family, but also anger for the way the career officer from Albany was killed. Clark, the father of two, was in his fifth combat deployment. Also killed in the attack were Army Major Jamie E. Leonard of Warwick, Orange County, Joseph Morabito, a 54-year-old private military contractor from Hunter Green County. He was also a retired Navy officer and a law enforcement professional retired. Family soldiers and more than 100 Patriot Guard riders watched as bagpipes played while military personnel lifted Clark's flag-draped coffin from the plane and placed it in an army hearse. Flag-bearing motorcycles escorted the black vehicle in a procession past hundreds who stood at attention along the roads. The hearse drove along Albany Shaker,
thank you,
Wolf, and Sand Creek Roads on its way to the CBA, which Clark graduated in 1990. The motorcade passed
for the one next,
dozens
you know,
of people.
When I watch a football game, son. Where's Cam anyway? Normally I'm here. He's always around here. Kick him in the ass. You give him hell, man. You don't let him... Nah, I'll get this.
I'm sorry, I apologize. Something happened to my microphone here. Air Force veteran Michelle Sanchez and her daughter Cameron were at the intersection. Michelle carried a folded flag. She said she considered the continuing presence of absence for the Clark family. "Everywhere this family looks, he'll be missing. He won't come back. Clark gave his life for his country's freedom," she said. She broke into tears as the hearse carrying Clark passed. "He was murdered. There isn't any way to sugarcoat it. We're over there to help, and they do this to us. It's disgraceful." Her son, Joshua Sanchez, a 23-year-old Army helicopter mechanic, leaves for Kuwait in October. When the motorcade, including Clark's hearse, arrived, uniformed students stood in an oval in front of the main school building. Several hundred people watched in silence under a hot sun as six soldiers removed the casket from the vehicle. Bagpipes again sounded as the soldiers marched the casket to the building. The Clark family filed in behind the coffin. "The family is suffering tremendously," said Albany County Controller Michael Connors, a longtime friend of the Clarks. "It's overwhelming to see the turnout of the community." Clark's mother, Kathleen Murphy Clark, was disgusted over the weekend when she was informed that due to military regulations, the nation would not pay for an additional flight to move her son's body from Albany to Texas, where he is to be buried. The cost of the flight was $569. Southwest Airlines solved the problem by agreeing to transport Clark's body to Texas in a hero flight. Connors told Clark's family, retired Army Colonel Jack Clark, He was overcome by the amount of love and emotion shown to the family during the last week. Thank you to Southwest Airlines. Now, Major Jamie Leonard, her cousin, wrote to a newspaper, to the editor. In this, she wrote, "Our family is deeply saddened to learn that our niece, Major Jamie Leonard, lost her life in Afghanistan on June 8th as part of an insider attack. Since her attendance and her graduation from West Point, Jamie dedicated her life to serving her country in a number of dangerous locations in harm's way around the world. She was most recently stationed at Fort Drum. Her family and friends will greatly miss her personality, her smile, and her love." Signed, Robert L. Ersp, Syracuse, New York. Editor's note directly below her letter, I'm sorry, his letter. He wrote, "The letter writer sent along a copy of an essay Major Leonard wrote for a hometown newspaper, the Warwick Advertiser, in 2010. It was about the meaning of Memorial Day. Her death in combat makes it even more poignant today." And I will let Jamie's words speak for her. She wrote, "When I was a young girl growing up in Warwick, I was not really sure I ever truly understood what Memorial Day meant. In my young mind, it marked a day where my mother would have us officially in white shoes for church. There would be neighborhood picnic barbecues, softball games, and parades with the American Legion marching down Main Street. For me, a veteran was my grandpa who fought in World War II, and all those older men who wore military-style hats with a bunch of pins in them. As I grew older, I appreciated it as a three-day weekend with time off from school or work. Even later, when I joined what was then a peacetime army, I failed to truly appreciate the emotional significance of this holiday. Memorial Day felt the same as Veterans Day. It was a day to thank soldiers. Being what the time, I appreciated the thanks, but I still failed to correctly realize what it meant. It was not until I actually went to war in Iraq, and when fellow soldiers in my unit failed to make it back from patrol, did I truly internalize the distinction. It wasn't until then I truly valued how these brave men and women who died serving our country deserved their own day, memorializing their sacrifice. Furthermore, realizing it is not only their sacrifice that requires recognition, but also their family left behind. My best friend lost her husband in Iraq, and I think a piece of her died that day. As I've gained more perspective, I've also regarded other concepts such as citizenship in a different light. Every day we hear about court cases trying to establish or expand the boundaries as to what our rights as citizens are. As citizens, we have the right to free speech, to freedom of religion, to work where we want if we are qualified, and to own guns. It is a rare day that I hear a conversation turn to what the duties of citizenship are for those who enjoy the rights protected by it. For those who have died for their country, they took measure of this duty and sacrificed their lives for it. It is my wish that this Memorial Day, you consider your duties as a citizen. The duty goes beyond serving in the armed forces, jury duty, taxes, or voting. Your duties are to each other, not some esoteric concept. Remember those who paid the tribute, the ultimate sacrifice for their country in war, but also honor those who sacrificed in other ways to make this country great. Law enforcement, firefighters, teachers, volunteers, etc. Please honor them indeed, and not just giving thanks, parades, or planting flowers or flags on graves. Take measure of what you have done for your country, and ask yourself if you could do more. Respectfully, Jamie Leonard, Major, U.S. Army, Warwick Valley High School Class of 92, United States Military Academy Class of 1997, Georgetown Public Policy Institute Class of 2007. God bless them all. And to them, to all the men who have served, who are serving, and who will serve, we dedicate this song to them, My Name is America, by Todd Allen Herndon.
Grip of oppression, I fall. liberty. I paid with the blood of my people. Freedom has never been free. Now my door's always open to dreamers and friends. When I'm attacked, I protect and defend. Because my name is America, I stand proud. I stand for my respect for humanity. Now I'm challenged by tyrants who envy my power, but their vicious deeds become my finest hour. Because my name is America, I stand.
Alan Herndon, My Name is America. Wow, that was a tough one to get through, Mike.
That certainly was. Annie, you certainly, each show that we dedicate to a soldier, they're always a challenge, because each show that we dedicate to a fallen hero is hard for all of us, but that was especially challenging. It is unbelievable just how our government can turn its back on our own people. But it's so wonderful that other people step up, are just waiting in the wing. It's like on a 9/11, when people need to jump, there's always somebody with opening arms saying, jump into my hands. And that was a very good dedication, Annie.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
But
I wasn't bawling, but those tears were coming down pretty hard. I was getting upset, too. I was, like, cursing out Obama and Bush. But anyway, thanks, Annie. As always, a great dedication. And May, she is so beautiful. And for those who want to go take a look at the picture in our description. And welcome, everybody. We're glad you are here.
Yep, and we've got a fantastic guest. I finished reading his book the other day. It's called The George Washington Vision. So I want to welcome aboard to Southern Sense Daniel Lykin. Good afternoon, Daniel.
Well, thank you very much. It's an honor and a pleasure to be here.
Yeah. Now, as you notice, we're being featured today on today's staff pick on Blog Talk Radio, so we're getting maximum coverage for your book. Can you give us just a little background about yourself?
Oh, sure. I have a long history of in my family of being in and around the military, and it started when George Washington was trying to fight against the British, and he went through all the small towns in Virginia, and my ancestor was just a militiaman, and he said, well, you're coming with me now, boy. So he followed George Washington up and down the first battles of the Revolutionary War, and eventually being captured by the British and put aboard a British prison ship. And then he escaped from the British and made his way back to Virginia and raised a bunch of people. And so generations of my family have served. He was actually a private, and generations have felt that compelling vision to serve their country. In fact, my son just gave me notice that he just was the final acceptance to the class of 2017 at United States Military Academy at West Point today.
Wow. Wow. How many generations is that then?
You know, Annie, I got to writing the book, and I used Ancestry.com, and maybe it should be a commercial for Ancestry.com if they're listening, because it was quite a few. His sister is also at West Point, and she's in her finishing up her second year. And I'm just a proud papa today to say that you know, they're carrying on the George Washington vision of self-sacrifice into the future. And as a small community up there at West Point, I knew people who knew Major Leonard and also Todd Clark. And they were magnificent soldiers, magnificent sacrificing for their country. And
wow. Now, when I put the dedication together, I had no idea. I had absolutely no idea. I just saw the story and I said, this is something that has to be spoken about. And when I read her essay, which I just repeated, I just said, no, this was perfect. I had no idea that you were connected with them.
Well, it's the community, you know. It's and that's really what we do, is try to support these heroes. And I was just talking with my brother-in-law, who General. Not a general yet, but hopefully he will be, Mark West and Mark Wells, and they were Todd's commanding officer over in Iraq. And he said, you know, not a finer soldier, not a finer upstanding American, not a finer upstanding family man. And, you know, these are the people that we're sending into harm's way. And I went further and I asked Mark, I said, you know, what can we do to protect them? And he said, well, maybe during these training sessions we could take their guns away from them. You know, something maybe just as simple as that. Because, you know, to send these individuals into this situation, I think that we need to ensure their protection. And so that's what I was just searching for, some, you know, some solutions for our people who have taken that and put themselves behind the country and given everything for their country.
Yeah, and it's not like we can do a security check, background check, like you can to like an American citizen. An American citizen, we have so many ways that you can track a person from birth to death that you know basically everything about them. You know, when you're talking about countries like Iraq and Afghanistan, there are no backgrounds. You know, you're talking about people living in dirt villages with no electricity or running water, no credit cards, no bank accounts, and nothing to say who this individual is, only their word or someone else's word about their character. So when they're
training... that's the thing that Mark said to me. He said, well, it pretty much comes down to either you trust them or you don't. And I thought that that's amazing. You know, of course, we as, you know, in getting to Todd's resume, you know, he was a Christian soldier. You know, I mean, and the trust and the faith that he had in people, you know, and the bad guys get you sometimes if you trust them. You know, if you trust them implicitly like that. And Mark went further to tell me that over in Iraq, when he was in the same type of situation of training Iraq, and at one point he was in Saudi training Saudi soldiers too. And when he was in Iraq, though, he had had a similar situation where the Iraqi army fractioned, and they had them kill a bunch of our soldiers, and the same type of thing when they were on training. And I said, well, what was the remedy there? And he said, well, they shut down training for a while, basically, and stopped training for a while, and then came up with a lock and load and their weapons, our weapons policy. That, you know, that's what bothers me more than anything else, is that here it's repeating itself. The lessons, you know, you hope that would have been the lesson that would have prevented this tragedy. And, you know, so I was just trying to pick his brain to see, being in that situation, try to recreate that situation to prevent future situations like this happening.
Yeah, now you mentioned Christian soldiers several times, and this is one thing that is driving me absolutely nuts about this administration. Recently, there have been several military personnel that have been attacked because they talk about their religious beliefs. One of them happened to have been a chaplain who counseled someone that was suicidal, and he ends up facing discipline, but he's a chaplain. What do you think a chaplain's supposed to be doing? And they're telling our men and women, you can't talk about the gospel. You can't have these prayer groups. We have freedom of religion, not freedom from religion. But we're asking men and women who put their lives on the line, who every day are praying to come home safe. You know, God is an integral part of a soldier's life, and yet they're denying them that.
Well, and that's part of the problem when you get a detachment of your leadership. And I think Congress is at about the lowest level of representatives having served in any capacity in the armed forces, and at the lowest level, I think since before World War II. And that's part of the problem when you get leadership that is detached from service. For some reason, the leadership of this country, and I'm not picking on the administration or Congress in particular, I think they all are complicitous in using the structures that we have built on the backs of our army to their own gain, and whether or not they can get out and profit from it. And I think that's got to change. I think we need more of these Army people coming back, running for office, running the country, giving them jobs, running companies. And that is going to be what leads us out of this recession, whether we believe we're in it or not. And that was the vision that George Washington laid down for our country through service to it. And by running for office, it's the highest service. And that's the way he looked at it. I mean, I just look at him as the ultimate role model, because he could have been Viceroy of England. He was at a point where if they had offered him the United States as a rulership at that time, they would have, and he certainly would have denied it and said no. Of course, we're free, and he decided to fight for it. And that's really what my book is about: is the fact that he had a large amount of faith. And what bothered me was, I think that over the years, we've broken that down. And there was one show where George Hamilton was playing George Washington, and I think he had a mistress. I didn't even watch it because I considered it to be such trash, because I grew up just south of Woodlawn Plantation, and we would go up to Mount Vernon. And when I started writing this book, I started to go to the church that he had gone to and just sitting in the pews. And then I went to the other Revolutionary War heroes like Paul Revere and Samuel Adams and sat in their churches. And it became apparent to me that there was some divine inspiration of all of these fellows, that they needed to be free, that they needed to fight for their independence. And the church part was going hand in hand. And we've taken away that spiritual sense of George Washington. And I did some research, and I found one letter from his daughter. And it said that when he would take the buggy back from Old Town Alexandria now to Mount Vernon, it's a few miles by buggy. And she said, I can't tell you whether he was praying or not, but his lips moved imperceptibly the whole way there and back. And he was praying, for God's sake. Our founder of our country was praying. And when he was offered the presidency after winning the Revolutionary War, he had to go to St. Paul's Chapel and get on his knees when he went down from Wall Street and pray for divine guidance. That, incidentally, is the only standing structure right across from the World Trade Center. When it collapsed in 9/11, a girder came flying through there and killed a 200-year-old oak tree in the yard, and not one pane of glass was broken in St. Paul's Chapel, where George Washington knelt. And you can see the kneeler, where he knelt and prayed for our young country's divine guidance. And it's just amazing to me that here we're trying to separate God out of our country. And I'm sure you're miffed by it too. And where is this coming from? And how is it happening?
Yeah, that is a point, and I'm going to get into that. But right now we've had a call that's been on hold. Let me see if we can bring this caller in. Area code 505, you're on the air here with Sudden Sense. I'm your host, Annie. Who am I speaking to? Area code 505.
This is Sue from New Mexico.
Hi, Sue. Did you want to have a question with our guest?
No, I'm just enjoying listening. Anyway, thank you very much.
No problem, Sue. I hope you enjoy
the
show.
Thank you, Sue. Have a great day.
Yeah, well, she's going to stay on and listen.
Yeah, she's so sweet. She's our good friend. Now, I want to mention that, you know, after I finished reading your book, and Sunday my husband and I went to church, it was really odd, and I didn't realize I was going to have this type of a reaction, because throughout the book, you mention praying the Our Father, and the church I go to happens to be now, this year, 301 years old. It's pre-Revolutionary War. It was built in 1712. Matter of fact, the church that was burnt in the movie Gone with the Wind, that was its chapel. that's up here in Sheldon, Old Sheldon's Church here in South Carolina. And I go to its mother church here. And when I went to do the Our Father, I started crying. And I didn't expect that, because I guess reading your book and the way you wove it through the book, I didn't realize the effect it was going to have on me, and it shocked me.
Well, thank you very much. I just wrote the book that maybe, and I wrote the book and it was published in 2005, and I thought maybe the country would need it as an inspiration at some point in time to get back to its roots and, you know, everybody introspectively say, you know, maybe I should have a relationship with God, and maybe we should include him in our country and what our country's doing and what our leadership is doing, and, you know, the Congress and even to the Department of State and Homeland Security. Everything should include the protection of our Almighty God, because that's what God formed, or George Washington basically got on his knees and made a bargain, the way I could see it, as much as possible. And he certainly offered up his whole life for us. And, you know, that's why he's the father of our country. And a lot of times I sit and ask somebody, what would George Washington think of that? And that's what I'd like any leader of ours that's listening right now, that's in a high office, let's look in the mirror and say, what would George Washington think of me? What would George Washington think of me and what I've achieved and what I'm doing? And, you know, and I think it puts a perspective on it that's a high standard, really.
Yeah, that is, it is true. And it, I found it also interesting, because doing my research after reading your book, you have a prayer in there, and I think it's on page 39, if I'm correct. I'm just doing this from memory. And I'm reading the prayer that you put in there, and you said that this was given to your ancestor by George Washington, and he said it when he was in captivity. And I'm wondering, all right, let me see just how close to the facts this is. And I ended up finding out that it was a truncated version of a prayer he wrote in his Monday morning prayer journal. And I said, wow. And word for word, but it's just a truncated version. And I'm thinking, gee, how much of the truth is in there? You know, did this actually happen to your relative?
Well, you know, my father and I attended chapel and when he was a colonel. And we actually attended chapel right on the grounds of George Washington's old estate, Fort Belvoir. And in the Fort Belvoir chapel was this enormous stained glass painting of George Washington kneeling in the snow. And that's on the cover of my book, The George Washington Vision. You can see that. It's a really famous picture of Washington, and very inspirational. And he had taught his men, try to live without vulgarities and try to live as straight a life as they could, you know, and accepting the fact. And in fact, he even wrestled at the very beginning of his military career with the commandment, thou shalt not kill. And I think that any Christian soldier probably wrestles with that. And he decided that for the greater good, if he needed to kill enemies in war, that that was acceptable. And, of course, he taught this to his men. I wrote the book as a fictional account, just because I don't like to go back and try to prove every little fact that's there. And also it takes into account future generations of Americans and what they have to do, perhaps, if enemies of the United States and our freedom gang up on us. And certainly, you know, the foreign structure with Syria and Putin and Obama sitting next to Putin. It was pretty tense yesterday. I don't know if you saw the them both sitting together, but neither of them looked very happy about the discussions that are ongoing right now in Syria, on Syria.
Yeah, I saw that, yeah. Yeah, it's funny because your book doesn't deal with just the history around George Washington. You take it through the centuries, to the Civil War, with the General McClellan having a vision with the also similar to George Washington's, in through up through the lunar landing, and then into today's day, and then in projecting it into the future. So you span the life of the country in your book, and what I like about it is it's not trying to think. It's not just telling a tale. You're actually got a mystery involved, and it's like an action adventure. In certain areas, I would say on par with Tom Clancy.
Thank you very much. I'm very honored to be in that same category with Tom Clancy. I really wrote it just as an inspiration for perhaps anybody who's on the fence about service to their country or the involvement of God in their country, and also those who are descendants of the American Revolution, and to really to thank them, because there are a lot of people. And if you just look at Todd Clark, I mean, his father Jack was a retired colonel too, and the lines of service that continue to keep going down through the generations, it's really impressive that these people, it's almost as though they were genetically imbued to follow this calling. And it's almost a religion. It's a religion. It's Christian soldiers, and they're protecting us at this very moment, which is almost like the invisible hand of God on earth, which was what I wanted to present in that book. And like you said, that's what the mystery is.
Yeah, it's our friend Jesse Weeks, she's with Unite the Vote, put up in the chat room that a 2012 Gallup poll found that 92% of Americans say they believe in God, which suggests that a lack of religious identity is not necessarily linked to atheism. She says that we must not let 8% outlaw religion, even if that 8% does hold political power. Thanks, Jesse. Appreciate that.
That's phenomenal. Really, that's a very pertinent point.
Yeah, and what I find is that today's day and age, it's like the American Idol programs, these reality TVs, they actually are putting out the attitude to young people that religion and believing in God is not necessarily a good thing. And one of the things you point in your book is that when your hero ends up having a vision himself, he's thought to be mentally ill. And I think that's a problem. Everyone treats being religious as a mental illness, and it's not.
Well, you're exactly right. I mean, these visions of God were reported by George Washington and were reported by McClellan. And I think that you find that especially among soldiers who have been in battle and have seen and been so close to death and the sacrifice and just the horror of it, the total belief in God, I think, that that occurs at those moments. And that was another point that I wanted to sort of prove, that the soldiers of this country have precognition too of events that are horrible and on the horizon, that they need to step up and to defend.
Yeah, it's funny because last week on Friday when we did the dedication, we dedicated to a chaplain, Army chaplain Capon, who was recently given the Medal of Honor for his, you know, heroism, and he ended up dying in captivity. But when he was in captivity, he went even as so far to defy the Koreans and have a Easter service. And it was said that at the Easter service, he had everyone praying and singing so loudly that even the Koreans were afraid to go in and tell them to shut up. They avoided the whole thing. They just put distance between themselves and the prisoners, and they said it was like they were warding off the spirits. So, yeah, religion has a power that you cannot describe. You have to feel it, to be honest about it.
Well, and that goes part and parcel with George Washington and the founding fathers of why they wanted to establish this country for that freedom of religion.
Yeah, and fortunately, someone wrote in the chat room that religious belief is irrelevant. I beg to differ because our laws are based upon the Ten Commandments. And where do the Ten Commandments come from? But from God. And it is by God that that we have been given these inalienable rights.
Well, you know, a lot of our law does come from English law. And so right now, I mean, we have a myriad of laws that didn't come from the Ten Commandments.
They've come from man. That's the difference between law given to mankind by God and then man then subverting the laws to his or her own purpose. That's the difference. That's the difference between good and evil. Wouldn't you say?
It's hard for me to discern it. You know, we just try to discern good in everything that we can. However, you know, what happened to Jamie and to Todd and also Joe, you know, I mean, Joe, you know, he was almost 55 years old. Let's not forget about Joe. And he was a police officer protecting people in his whole career in New York and going over there and losing his life too. He's known as the hero too, and respect our police officers and what they've done. But, you know, I just want the protection for these people who are protecting us. I hope that there's rethinking as far as the protection of our troops in the forward areas in these training situations. And by the high leadership, you know, and it was an utter disgrace, really, that the Army would not fly Todd's body down to Texas. And did you discuss earlier that Southwest Airlines stepped up to the plate?
Yes, we
and
did.
When our government won. But, you know, Annie, I started thinking, what is the tab that the American taxpayer is paying for all our leaders to fly to and fro? I mean, just say, pick out one leader and what their airline bill would be. And Todd's mother said it the best. She said, well, they were willing to send him back and forth to war for 5 tours, and he made the final sacrifice, the ultimate sacrifice, and they wouldn't even fly him home to be buried.
Yeah, just for a mere $569. Meanwhile, we have Obama with his entire family and entourage gallivanting around in Europe right now for $100 million. And you can't afford $569 for an American hero. It blows my mind. And the Joe you were talking about is Joe Marabito, who was retired law enforcement and also a former Navy officer. So he served and gave sacrifice, not just in the Navy and law enforcement, but now is a contractor to our government. So he's actually served 3 full times. And, you know, to not honor these men and women
as part. Well, now, they have to, you almost have to be used to persecution, almost like a Christian, because of the way that they treat you. I mean, the way that our government is treating them. I mean, look at the war in Iraq, for example, which I went to in my book a little bit because I was invited to the White House through a group of missile defense advocates, and, you know, it got into missile defense type of things, but we exited Iraq without taking that revenue and giving it back to the wounded warriors. I mean, here we're asking for civilians to contribute every day on the TV channel to wounded warriors. The government should be doing that. Annie, it goes all the way back to the George Washington vision. I forgot to tell you what happened after my ancestor escaped from the British. He came back. He filed for his pension. And you know what they did? The United States government denied it. You know why? Because he didn't have any papers signing him over from the British. So they said, oh, well, you're a deserter from the British, so you're a deserter from us. If you escaped as a prisoner and didn't get the turnover papers. So he died.
No, excuse me. Let me go back and say, hey, I escaped from you. Just please sign this note so I can get my pension.
He died. He died at age 55. Same, almost Joe's age, exactly. His family, the people of the American Revolution, were not being paid by their government. They had been promised land. They had been promised everything to fight the war. So in the early 1800s, so many people had not been paid that they passed a law to pay them. So Susanna, his wife, presented the case, and they said, well, we got to show marriage certificate to make sure you were married to the fellow. And Patrick Henry was the judge when they got married. So it's tough to argue with Patrick Henry's signature on something. So the children came in, and they said, well, we were just talking about your father's war record because he's dead now and we didn't pay him, so we've got to pay him. So can you prove? And they said, well, he said twice that the fighting got so intense around General Washington that his horse was shot out from under him.
Mm-hmm.
And they said, well, that's pretty good. And they said, well, how about the Siege of Long Island? And he said, well, Dad said that the fighting was the most intense he's ever experienced, and thank God it, you know, got away from there. And they said, well, what else? They said, well, he had shackle marks on his wrists and his ankles that never healed.
My God, what are they looking for? I mean, what are they looking for? The size of his private parts? This is ridiculous. This is George Washington.
Well, that was the early Treasury under Aaron Burr. They didn't want to. They didn't. You know, wars bankrupt you, and hopefully the leaders realize that too before we get into any more wars like in Syria. And so the Treasury was in so much of a problem, they were trying to deny claims way back then. But ultimately, they won. And Susanna received a script in quill for $81 per year until she passed away. So they fought, and the widows and orphans of the American Revolution were paid out of that act. But have to go back. You know, it begins sort of this army sense of humor, you know, where you've got to fight, continue to fight everybody. You have to fight for everything.
It's the bureaucracy. You know, a bureaucrat is a bureaucrat, no matter what day and age it is. A bureaucrat was a bureaucrat under Caesar. A bureaucrat was a bureaucrat under our revolutionary government. And a bureaucrat still the same individual under this current administration. You just can't change a bureaucrat.
Well, a friend of mine once said, if pro is the opposite of con, then progress is the opposite of Congress.
Yeah. Now, I do have one bone to pick with you. I found an error in the book, and it dealt with you're talking about Paul Revere, and this person was doing a escorting a tour talking about Paul Revere and said that Paul Revere rode alone, and that bothered me. And I had to double check my facts because I happen to love the Revolutionary War. I grew up on Long Island in New York, in the area of where some of the Battle of Long Island took place on. So I had a great fondness for the Revolution since I also graduated high school in the Bicentennial. But you ignored the fact that there was William Dawes did ride with him. And along the way, they picked up, what's his name, Samuel Prescott. And the whole thing
right.
was put together. The whole plan was put together, and they were chosen, selected by Dr. Joseph Warren. And we did dedicate one of our shows, believe it or not, to Dr. Warren, who was killed at the Battle of Bunker Hill. It's a famous painting, if anyone wants to take a look at that one. But Paul Revere did not complete the ride. He was captured, and he did escape, and he never got as far as Concord. He ended up going back to Lexington. Dawes got thrown off his horse when the British were chasing him. He ended up walking back to Lexington. The only one that completed the ride was Prescott.
Thank you so much for that. That's wonderful that you read my book with such attention. Thank you, Annie, for that. That I love history, too, and when those corrections come along, I think at that point in the book, I was more concerned with the character's precognition of 9/11, because it was on August 11th. It was a month before when he was at the church, Paul Revere's church down in Boston, the Old North Church, in which he discovers, looking at him, a marble likeness of George Washington. And that's when the George Washington vision really comes together, and he decides that he's got to write the Secretary of State and the Secretary of Defense and just at least say, I have a precognition that war is about to begin for the United States. And so that I ignored those little details, and thank you so much for pointing that out.
Well, now you got to re-release the book.
I will.
Because you are strong in precognitive thought, and it's something that people have a tendency to dismiss. And, you know, somewhere along the way, everyone in their life at one point has some sort of a precognitive thought. And no one knows why or how or what the reason is. I mean, how many people did not board those planes on 9/11 because they felt something was wrong? You know, my sister-in-law was late going into work at the Twin Towers. Something held her back, and had she been there, she would have been one of the victims. I mean, you hear so many stories of people sensing that something's going to happen, and the mental health community thinks that this is a disease. It's not. It's part of being human.
Well, and that's one of the disturbing things that I found in my research, was that anyone with a precognitive type of situation, they labeled them as bipolar, and started these powerful series of antipsychotic drugs, Depakote and Seroquel and combinations, where if you took those drugs, study that, if you took those in combination, it actually incapacitates you from any cognitive thing. It makes you in such a fog that it really separates the humanity from you. You become sort of like a rat, sort of like the rat for the pharmaceutical industry. And, you know, that was another thing that really was part of the impetus. at the time, I felt as though the pharmaceutical industry has taken so much money and so much power from the American people at this point in time. And maybe that you can add to the cost of Obamacare, too, where we've got to start decoupling the dependence on the pharmacological solutions to all of our problems here and start to find maybe religion. Maybe that would be a good thing to replace a lot of these drugs.
Yeah. Yeah, that would be amazing. Because one of the things you find is that whenever you go to the doctor, they're giving you a pill for this, a pill for that, and the next thing you know, you're up to taking about 10 pills a day. You know, not everything
legalized,
can be answered.
I call them legalized drug pushers, you know, and the whole thing where you have a prescription and you've got pens that and the drug rep comes in and says, "Here, doc, I'll take you out to lunch, and gee, I'm your best friend, and here's some free stuff, and doesn't this work so well?" And yeah, well, start writing it out, you know, and without talking to the people. I mean, that's what we're having now, a discourse about, well, yeah, I've had that experience. Oh, well, yeah, too, I've had, you know, that experience. And I think it's very healing to just have communication like that. I mean, and just look at the Army again with Major Hassan down there, and he was supposed to be doing his job, you know, as a psychiatrist. I haven't read how many people he prescribed, you know, antipsychotics to or anything. And this goes to hand in hand with war too, because our guys are coming back from war. They're coming in between tours. They're doing more multiple tours than I've ever seen. I mean, for Todd to have done 5 tours and have a Purple Heart when he got hurt by the IED, it's just inconceivable to try, and he has 2 young babies, young kids, and to try to come back and to adjust. I'm just wondering why there isn't more talking, more psychiatrists talking with these guys, because they come back and there's a greater level of unemployment, there's a greater level of alcoholism and drug abuse, and also they get into conflicts where they get armed conflicts with police. And nobody's saying, "You're a hero, take the year off, and we're going to pay for your counseling." You know why our leaders are, like you said, jetting around the world on the backs of what these guys have achieved. And with Iraq, for example, how come the Chinese now are negotiating for the oil from Iraq and beating us to it? It should be ours to pay back the warriors. It should be ours. And how come we exited Iraq and just said, bye-bye, without saying, "Hey, wait a minute, guys. We gave you freedom from an oppressive regime here. We freed you. So now here's the bill. Help us pay it." But where was our State Department? Where was the cohesion of policy between one administration to another? They just said, "Oh, well, that was the old guy's policy, so we're leaving now." It boggles the mind that the service guys are not being cared for and not being paid back for their sacrifices.
Yes,
and the epitome of it.
It's something that we hear a lot of, because my co-host knows that we did a lot of work with the Independence Fund in supporting them. We've had Nicole Johnson on with the PTSD retreat, and it's independent civilian groups like this that are helping the veterans more than our own VA. We have a VA that's not getting the funds from Congress to begin with. And when they do get the funds, they have such a slow backlog because of the burgeoning bureaucracy that's caught up in the agency that it takes sometimes upwards 2 years before a veteran is even treated. And what happens in those 2 years? You're still suffering from PTSD.
That's got to change. That really has to change, don't you think? Don't you think it's time that's got to change? Because I was thinking, you know, as a result of the tragedies that happened to Todd and Jamie and Joe, I hate to say the V word. I hate to say Vietnam. But, you know, it almost is that point where you're saying, what are we doing for our military? Half the country acts like we're not even at war. We're at war every day. And such a small portion, a small percentage of the United States citizens are bearing the burden of this thing. It's almost politically, if everything is given out, if it's a political number that's large enough to matter. You know, and that's ridiculous. For the amount of the burden and the amount of the share of the work and the sacrifice that these men and their families, I mean, think of his widow with the two children now, raising them all alone. I mean, the sacrifice goes through the generations, and that's what I wanted to prove through the George Washington vision, was that it keeps going on. I mean, and for your kids, for my kids, they're going to be shouldering that burden too. And if they have that calling to serve and to sacrifice, my son told me today, he said, I've got news for you and I want to tell you in person, because we're always texting now, you know, text this. That's the only way really I could get a response. And I said to him, I called him. I said, well, is it good or is it bad? And he goes, I guess you'll just have to wait a little while in suspense. And so I waited there until he came home and told me that he was appointed to West Point. And I cried. I had mixed emotion, you know, because here I knew I was going on your show today to talk about the book, and I had knowledge of what happened, and I really cried. It brings tears and total heartbreak to you when you study what happened to these fine Americans, you know. And I cried. I had mixed emotions. I'm so proud of him. Yet at the same time, he's going to be going into harm's way, just like Jamie. And right across from his grandparents' house up at Highland Falls, Jamie is at the Hogan Funeral Home that we pass all the time on the way in and out of West Point. So she's a local girl. She was a crew member up there. And all the West Point people are stellar, unbelievable leadership. And do you know that they couldn't do their training this year because of our leadership, the sequestration, the Congress and the president not coming up with an agreement, left our people, the cadets, without the training that they were scheduled for. And that's deplorable.
That's a shame. That is a shame. That's an utter shame. That is disgraceful. There's no excuse for that. I mean, we've got Obama jetting over for $100,000. He's bringing his limos and his entourage and everything. And they won't even open up the doors to the tourists at the White House. They won't give our veterans the benefits they need. We had to have the House of Congress, the House of Representatives, finally voted for a pay raise for our military men and women. Now they're coming up with this plan, trying once again to make our men and women in uniform to pay for their own health insurance when you're asking them to lay their life and body on the line. And we will then turn around and say, all right, you lay your life on the line for us, and we will make sure, should you get wounded, that we will take care of you. We will help your health. We won't even do that. And it's disgusting, and it's deplorable, and it's got to stop.
Why do you think there is such an absence of shame, you know, to the leadership? Why do you think And I'm not singling out anybody. I'm saying all of them. All of them are in a position of leadership and power, have gotten some sort of Hollywood star atmosphere or something where they feel as though, you know, they're on a subcommittee on TV and asking questions. And where do they think that they can get away with this without shame, without shame on them for abandoning our guys and women that have sacrificed, and in this show, the three that sacrificed everything for us, for our country, and most of all for our government who put them there. And for them, the government, to say, we're denying you this coverage, we're denying you this treatment, it's deplorable. They should all be ashamed, really. And that's what I think, through the George Washington vision, that's what I think George Washington would think of them at this point in time.
Well,
yeah,
you have to have love for your country, and you have to have you have to have the love not only for the country, but for those who sacrificed for it. And when you don't, this is what we have. You know, whoever, I don't know whoever made this statement, but I know it's hundreds of years old, birds of a feather flock together. They certainly knew what they were talking about, because for the most part, most of these people have no morals. They have no, they are as close to the enemy of the republic that we could possibly pick. And one of the worst things about it is, sadly, the people don't seem to really care. Because 100 years ago, they could have never gotten away with this from the people.
I don't know. I think they tried that. If they tried it over the years, and it's just every now and then we have to go back and fight them on it. And I think it's the same in every single level of our government throughout our entire history. And we just have to get our voices out there and say, stop it. Enough is enough.
Well, yeah, and this discourse that we're having, I hope, will be an impetus for people to get mad and say, yeah, I heard that on the radio, that they're not letting the cadets at West Point do airborne training. You know, what if they have to lead a mission, like to get Osama bin Laden in the future, or the Dagestan camp where the brothers that bombed in Boston came from, originated with their training, and they're leading a group of people in there and they don't have enough training. How much is a Predator missile, a drone, in comparison to the human capital that we're wasting, that we're saying, no, you're denied, you know, your heart and your spirit is great, but... And that's where I think some of the Army humor comes from, is that it's a dark humor, because here we're being sent off to death to defend this republic, yet you're giving us substandard training, substandard benefits, substandard outprocessing. And like you said, it's a laugh-off, oh, well, the VA, the bureaucracy. I guess it's not as bad as with Born on the 4th of July, when Tom Cruise was lying there and a rat was going by his head after Vietnam. But we've really got to clean up our act as far as appreciating the sacrifice and paying the sacrifice. And, you know, I don't understand why Iraq is not paying that bill. I want to know really why they're not. Maybe the bureaucrats have taken so much money from us over the years. Maybe the leadership and everybody has taken so much from us in terms of taxes that they really don't know how to pay a bill, and they don't know really where money comes from or how to balance a budget. And they're just buying a lot of treasury bonds now, $85 billion a month to support up the economy. You know, where does this all end if we don't collect our due from the people that that we went in and gave the freedom to, and gave it to them.
Yeah, that is true. But we also have to take a look at who we consider our friends to be. I mean, one of the things you discuss is Sharia law in Islam and the different types of Islam that's out there. You know, it's extremists, Wahhabism, compared to what traditional Islam should be. And it's great that you have it, the way you weave this whole thing into the story and predicting what's going to be occurring in the future. We have to take a look at who our friends actually are, because right now they're supposed to be sending in 300 Marines into Syria. You know, they should have done that 9 months ago, a year ago, when the rebels were people that we knew, that they weren't being influenced by Hezbollah, by Al-Qaeda, and by the Muslim Brotherhood. You know, now we have no idea who they are. We don't know what side they're on, and there's so many different fractions within the rebels that they're fighting each other, not just the government. You know, we didn't do it. We sat on our hands, and now we're sending people in there when we have no idea what the mission is. This is
the leadership. You really hit the nail on the head. I mean, you've really got to have a leadership that is cohesive as far as the State Department and the Defense Department, as far as what the objectives are, and as quick and like you said, I mean, sitting back. And did you see the movie on the raid to get the Osama bin Laden? How long they thought that Osama bin Laden was at that house before they actually took action? And in the final one of the impetus was, would you want to be the one that let Osama bin Laden get away if it's not him? And that was the cause to action, where I think it was the greater part of a year where they didn't act, even though all the intelligence showed that it was him. And yeah. Sometimes you wait too long, you know, like the ill-fated hostage rescue mission that Jimmy Carter unfortunately, ordered. Sometimes you wait too long, and like you said, it could wind up being a disaster, too little, too late, and then ending up with more commitment of troops and forces. In fact, one of my chapters in the book actually talked about Aleppo and talked about Syria, and I was just trying to use, I don't know, inspiration and an analysis of the future, but I wrote that about 10 years ago, and it really talked about how the Russians and the Americans were going to meet there in Aleppo, and that's probably the most dangerous situation that we can get. And that's what disturbed me yesterday when I saw Obama with not the smile on his face, but, boy, he looked pretty upset, and Putin looked pretty upset too. And I thought, this is a very, very dangerous situation at this point in time.
Yeah, that's exactly what's happening. And that's very funny that you predicted it in your book, which is the George Washington Vision. You know, I found a lot of the stuff that you wrote in there rather amazing, and even your prediction on future technology, which you were mentioning about the pilot, where the helmet he's wearing actually has him flying the plane. It's his eyes are directing all the equipment. And now we already have this stuff. You predicted it almost 10 years ago, and here it's come to fruition. The technology is now out there, and I found that really, really amazing.
Thank you, Annie. I really thank you. I really don't deserve the accolades. It's the people who did it, who achieved those things. You know, it's the teamwork of the people that put everything together. And maybe some of them read the George Washington Vision. I know a lot of the generals that were in the missile defense program were aware of the book and read it. And I wanted, that's the reason why I wanted the book published and I wanted it out there, was for an inspiration for those Army officers, those Air Force officers, those Marine officers, and those Navy officers, and they're all included in the book, to have an inspiration to beat this enemy. Like you said, the Wahhabism, they're not our friends. They believe that we shall be killed, just like the Boston bombers. How insane. For us, Massachusetts gave them $100,000 on scholarship to be in this country, to be right in the Cambridge, the heart of education, and hear how ungrateful they were. They just wanted to kill us. And that's Wahhabism. It is so insane. And, you know, a lot of people chastised George Bush and made fun of him. And maybe it was because of the religion. But sometimes you got to sit there and think, if there was divine pact with George Washington, and on the day that 9/11 happened, why was George Bush there? Why was he there? And, you know, he picked us up. He picked us up. And you can say whatever about the ensuing or involvement in Iraq and Afghanistan and everything else, and there can be debate and all of that. But he brought us up. They were striking at our Congress and our president and our financial system. They were trying to collapse us, and they came close to doing it in one day. They were so close with that airliner that went down. And, you know, Todd Beamer, he was praying the Lord's Prayer when he took that last plane down in the field in Pennsylvania. And it's on his cell. It was on the cell phone to his wife. He was saying the Lord's Prayer as they were getting into that cabin and making those terrorists crash that plane. But to this day, now, why weren't the police in Boston informed by the FBI that was informed by the Russians? Why weren't those protectors put on alert to save those people? And look at the carnage of the legs and the loss of life that occurred in Boston as a result of this lax of the people who are in charge, of the people that we're paying to protect us and at the highest levels. And what has happened there with that? What has happened? Oh, it's just dropped as far as the investigation about that? And what about a young person that wants to go into foreign service? And they look at the disaster that happened in Benghazi and the failure of our people to be protected. Why would you want to even go into foreign service and put yourself in that position? The mother of our ambassador said he was always wanting peace. That's all he wanted to do. And really, that's what I wanted to do through my book, was to say, look, we can have the capability to really destroy all the enemies of the United States. But because we're Christian, we get along with you. We accept the fact that you're trying to kill us. And George Bush said they've hijacked the religion. And that's exactly what they've done. They've taken the religion, and the people in that Dagestan training camp were basically losers that were dropouts and military guys that escape or whatever and left AWOL, and now they're in Dagestan, and they embrace the religion for 6 months, and then they get certified to go out and be a terrorist. I mean, they're just killers. That's all they are, is killers. And I think that the Army personnel that were killed, and they will tell you they know that, and they've got no problem, just like George Washington wrestled with the issue of kill or not kill. He knew, if they're trying to kill me, then they don't believe in God, really. They're unbelievers in God, and I'm going to kill them first. And that's what our Army is there for, basically, is to protect us from those bad guys doing like what they did in Boston. But I couldn't – I have trouble believing that it's not going to happen again with our guard let down so much. And like you said, the excesses of the bureaucracy being more important to the actual functioning and the actual accountability of it. And who's being accountable for this? For when these happen, who's being accountable?
Well,
yeah, very
Dan,
true. Another thing I wanted to point out just real quick, Annie, before I pass it to you, is that one of the reasons I think the religious aspect is so important throughout the years, I think one of the reasons our soldiers have not only been so good, well-trained, and the world's best, period, even going back in all the wars, we still had the best, was basically not necessarily they're any bigger or smaller or the color of their hair, but it's their belief in Christ. And if you think about it, that is, even to this day, what continues to keep us moving forward. Now, if the powers that be try to remove that, then we're looking for them for salvation and not really the Jesus Christ. And as it says in the Declaration, that these are endowed by our Creator. Nobody can take it away, and nobody can give it to us. They are granted from the King upon birth. That's why, number one, we protect life in the Declaration of Independence. Sorry, Annie, go ahead.
I want to thank you for joining us, Dan. We're down to our last 3.5 minutes. The time just flew. And I'm recommending this book to everyone to get it. It's the George Washington Vision, and you can pick it up at Amazon.com. There's a link in the chat room to the Amazon, or you just go to Amazon and put in George Washington Vision, and the book will pop up. There's also a link on the show page, so if you click on the show page, just follow down below Dan's name, and there's a link to buy the book there. Dan, I want to thank you very much, and you're welcome to come back anytime.
Thank you so much for your hospitality, and hopefully that we can enact changes to address our leaders to say, you've got to address these problems. It's your job. You've got to protect us, and you've got to protect the ones that are protecting us.
Amen to that. Amen. And matter of fact, in our upcoming show, we're going to be having on Friday, we're going to have Judson Phillips of FreedomWorks on. And then next Tuesday, I don't know if you remember, Diane Belsom from the Laurel County Tea Party here in South Carolina, who testified last week before Congress about the IRS scandal. She's a friend of mine. She'll be joining us next Tuesday. And we've got in the works Unite the Vote, Jesse Weeks, and her friend is going to be working with us on a top 10 things you would do if you were president. So we've got some exciting shows coming up, so we hope everyone will join us. We'll be back here on Friday, same bat time, same bat station. So please join us with Judson Phillips from FreedomWorks. I want to thank you, Dan, so much.
Fantastic.
Yeah,
thank you.
And
God bless you and all of your listeners for your good work and the news that you spread.
Thank you. All right, that was Dan Lykin, and his book is The George Washington Vision, up on Amazon.com. So, Mike, until then, I want to say good night, and God bless to everyone out there.
We'll see, Annie. We'll see everybody tonight on Conservative Primetime.
Okay.
If you find yourself in trouble, count on me, my friend. I'll get right up in trouble.
You've been listening to Southern Sense Blog Talk Radio. Producer and your hostess extraordinaire is Ann Ubelis. The theme music, American Stand Up, is written and performed by Don Fortney. For more from Don, check out his webpage, teapartymusic.webs.com. Southern Sense is a proud member of Ghost Fighter Radio and Freedom Media Network. Southern Sense is common sense. Take it out, Don.
American. look me straight in the eye. Tell me what you see. I'll tell the truth every time. Yes, you can count on me. I've got the backbone, American. I've got the heart, American. I've got the will, American. Will you stand up? Don't sit down. Stand up, don't back down. Stand up and shout it out. Stand up, let's make it loud, American.